Welcome to the Brand Thomas Podcast with Louise Duffy, the podcast which introduces you to the people behind the brands from the worlds of fashion, beauty, and beyond. In today's podcast, I talk to the co-founder and CEO of one of Ireland's fastest growing skincare brands, Pestle & Mortar. In 2004, Sonia launched the company with one product, Pure Hyaluronic Serum, and a commitment to providing simple solutions for all skin types. 5 years later, Pestle & Mortar has grown into a range and is stocked across the globe. I'm Louise Duffy, and this is the Brand Thomas Podcast. Hi, Sonia. Welcome to the Brand Thomas Podcast.
Hi, Louise. It's great to be here.
It's so lovely to chat to you because I've long been a fan of Pestle & Mortar and it's been amazing to watch the growth of the last 5 years. So has it been a bit of a whirlwind for you and your husband and your family? It's been tremendous growth.
It has. I was in London last week. We just launched into 45 Marks & Spencer stores. We recently signed contract with a distributor in Dubai and in Russia and also in China. So,
So if we did a roll call of the countries you're in, we are spanning the globe.
We are. I think we're at 31 countries at the moment.
In 5 years though, Sonia, that is really outstanding, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Do you get to sit back and kind of just enjoy that? Or are you just on to the next thing immediately?
I suppose that we have to keep on going. Yeah. So strike while the iron is hot. Mm-hmm. And our brand is in demand. So, we do sit back and celebrate our achievements, but I mean, we're always on the go.
On the go and ready for the next thing. So life is busy in the DC household at the moment.
It is.
So let's go right back to the start then, because, you know, your heritage and your business roots are very interesting and they've led to this success and your approach to business. So you grew up in a family business. Your dad had a shop in Newbridge.
That's right. Yeah. So my dad had a general drapery shop at that time, which was he sold clothing, shoes, Playtex underwear, bras.
Yeah,
so Clark's shoes. So he would have been the first person in Ireland to have a Clark's shoes, in a store, and also Playtex underwear.
Wow. Yeah. So he obviously had that foresight as well to spot things that were needed or missing in the market.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. He did. And in a small town in Newbridge, there was nothing like that available. Mm. So he did. He ran his own store. I grew up, I'm one of six children, but both my parents are Indian. Yeah. But I was born in Ireland and they've lived in Ireland for over 50 years.
Right.
So I suppose I had a very Indian bringing up, but also an Irish one.
Yeah.
So my dad was very, he made sure that we fitted in. So we would have been the only Asian family in our town at that time.
Imagine,
growing up.
You know, so different now.
Yeah. So we went to the local school and we were allowed to have boyfriends. And at that time, you know, for Asian parents, they didn't allow that.
It was more strict.
They were much more strict. So, but my parents weren't like that. My dad was really, he was really progressive and he understood that we lived in Ireland so that we should be brought up like Irish
of
people.
Course, yeah.
Yeah, and Irish
that's
kids.
That's great. And as you say, it was a rarity at the time.
It was.
You know,
yeah.
But it has stood to you so much.
Yeah. So he had one strong focus, which was that we all had to be educated.
Yeah.
So, but that's, you know, for a lot of Asian families, that's their number one priority is education.
Was that a factor in moving to Ireland, the Irish education system?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, at that time, and we still do, we have quite a good education system. Mm. And also English is the language here. So he really made that decision based on the fact that he was going to go back to India, have an arranged marriage. Both my parents had an arranged marriage.
Oh, wow.
And he knew that he wanted to have a large family. Mm-hmm. And education was really important to him.
And was he strict about it? I know he wasn't strict in other ways, but was he strict about you have to go to college? Did he direct you in any way?
He was extremely strict about education. So to the point of, you know, he had rules that you have to go to NUI college.
Okay.
So, you know, he was really, really strict.
Yeah.
You know, we had to go to either, I went to UCD, my brothers went to UCD also, my sister went to Trinity.
Mm.
And he was very, very strict. So not only with education, we also have, you know, we all played every musical instrument under the sun. So
we
I can
like
play the drums.
And can you?
Yeah. My youngest brother is a musician. But music was really important. Yeah.
And would you have those family sessions whenever there was a party, everyone has to take out their instrument?
Yeah. Like, did you have that as well?
Oh, we had that. Yeah. And I play the accordion. So at least you pick something a little bit edgier than the accordion. That was zero fun. And very cumbersome to bring around.
Yes.
I suppose the drums, you beat me with that.
Yeah.
So have you then, based on the way your dad approached education and, you know, being strict in how what he wanted you to learn, you have five children yourself. Mm. Are you similar in your approach?
I suppose I am, but I'm a little bit more open-minded.
Mm.
So I married a very creative man.
Yeah.
He's a portrait photographer. He also studied portrait commercial photography in Dunleary.
Right.
But I suppose that, you know, when I grew up, it was the main, you know, you're either going to study law or medicine or become a doctor or an accountant or a solicitor. But I was the only one in my family that I've got an arts degree.
Right. So you were the rogue in the family.
Yes. So, but I suppose with my own children, I am a little bit more open-minded as to, you know, if my eldest daughter is into flowers, she could be a florist or, you know.
But this is something we've talked about then, you know, you have to be open-minded, I think, in today's culture that, you know, I was the same when I was going to college. It was kind of choose one or the other and then you're stuck with it, or so we thought. But I think you have to be open to different career routes arising as you go along.
I think that in today's world, it's so competitive for children growing up. And to really get anywhere, they have to absolutely excel in whatever they do. So in order to excel, they have to absolutely love what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it would be finding or helping them to find what they are absolutely passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter what it is, but if they're passionate about it, they will be happy and they're more likely to succeed.
So you are passionate about your business now, but you didn't necessarily have that background in biology or chemistry or what it requires to formulate the products that you're selling all over the world now. So if one of your children came to you and said, you know, I am passionate about flowers and I really want to do this, would you veer them towards a business background and then experiment with the passion or the creative or, you know, the more specific industry? Do you think that the business background is very important? You had it not officially through your formal education, but through your growing up in your dad's shop.
I think that I would definitely make them explore the creative aspect because creativity is something that you can't put a value on.
Yeah.
So, and I've learned that. So that's what people will pay for is creativity.
Mm-hmm.
The business can come later and they can learn the business.
So then in your background, you know, in your heritage, you come from generations of natural healers in India. So how did that stand to you? Was there something that you took from that you've since brought to Pestle and Mortar?
So my grandfather, he was the medicine man in India,
where
my dad grew up in a small town called Hoshiarpur, which has a small town in India, has a population of 200,000. But his brother, he is still the medicine man in that store today. So natural healing, it's in my family for over 100 years. So the name Pestle and Mortar, that's where it comes from.
That's what they work with.
Yeah. So my uncle still uses a pestle and mortar to grind down food and spices and herbs to make his medicines today.
Yeah.
So I suppose what I did was I took my heritage of natural healing and I combined it with science. So I grew up with, if any of us were ever ill, my father would remedy it naturally.
Wow.
So it's absolutely inherent it's in my DNA.
It's in your DNA,
And it comes naturally to me.
Yeah. And do you still veer towards the natural remedies as opposed to if somebody has a headache, you're not getting a Panadol out of the press, or do you?
I do and I don't. I would do both.
Yeah.
But I definitely believe that it's what we eat is really important. Yeah. So I love cooking. So we will cook every night and we cook fresh food and the kids eat mostly everything we've out of.
One.
Yeah, there's always one. Yeah, we've got one fussy eater, but we're working on him.
Okay.
But I definitely think that I think it's really all about what we're eating, what we're putting into our bodies. Yeah.
So then you met your husband and he also had a family business too, DC Photographic.
So I grew up with Porik. So
Childhood sweethearts?
No. So he was one of my brothers, or still is one of my brother's best friends.
Oh.
So, but we got together when we were 26 and we got married when we were 27.
Okay.
But I knew him.
You
for
knew
most
him.
Of my
life. There wasn't a long courtship, I suppose.
Yes.
You knew what you were dealing with.
Yeah, I knew him. And then also my parents knew him and my parents knew his parents as well.
Okay.
So it was, I mean, it wasn't an arranged marriage.
No, but you know, it was a comfortable transition, you know, because you knew each other and you grew up together. That's lovely.
Yeah. So when I married Porik, I worked in my siblings' business. So we had a business where we were clothing importers, and I worked together with them after college. I worked together with them for a few years and I was the buyer. So I used to travel a lot and buy fashion. Yeah. So,
okay.
And I worked together with
them. So many strings to this bow.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
And then when I married Porik, he wanted me to join his business.
Mm.
And at first I said no.
Yeah.
And the reason was I was unsure of whether the business could afford me.
I like your style.
So we sat down and we did the numbers and it worked for us.
Okay. And were you cautious about getting into business with your husband? Because you knew him, you grew up with him, brother's best pal, but getting into business and living together and having a family together, that's a lot. And that could be probably daunting for a couple.
Yeah, I suppose with myself and Porik, we're very similar, but we're very different as well. So I like doing the things that he doesn't like doing and vice versa.
You complement each other.
Yeah.
In that way.
So, and I would never really, you know, I trust his opinion. He pretty much we run Pressel & Mortar together as joint CEOs.
Mm.
And I suppose we work together. It's not for everybody to work together with their spouse or partner.
Do you have to come, I know you said the kids say you're always talking about business at home, but is there a point where you have to say, okay, we leave the office there now and we'll go home and switch off? Is that hard to do?
That's really hard to do.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you've, last night we were watching, it just came into my mind, we were watching Succession.
Oh, I love
it. Yeah, so we were watching that.
I'm obsessed
and
with it.
So Porik actually turned around to me and he said, oh my God, like that's what it takes to be a billionaire, Roy.
I hope the kids are a little better behaved than those Roys.
No,
they're odious.
And I said to it, I said, yeah, but look, he loves it. That's him. That's what makes him. What's he going to do if he's not
he's
doing
never
that?
Stop.
Never, ever.
And if it's your business and it's your passion and you enjoy it, why stop? I think once you stop, what do you do?
I suppose for us, because we have five children, so in the evenings it's quite busy.
Yeah.
So, and then Porik would tend to come home a little bit later than me. So by the time he comes home, you know, he's coming home to dinner and most of the things are done.
A little more peaceful.
Yeah, it's a little bit more peaceful. He might be bringing someone to Gaelic football or rugby or hockey, whatever. But so we don't really get a chance then to talk. But when we do talk, we mostly
talk
about business. Yeah, mostly.
And so then on Succession, is the story of this multi-billionaire and his four kids who are all fighting for the chance to take over. Would you like the kids to get involved then down the line?
Would I like them to be involved? I think that I will never, ever, I don't think I will encourage them to set up their own business. I think it has to come from them.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. So I think that's running your own business is probably the hardest thing you can do.
Yeah.
And you want to be absolutely 100% sure that it's something that you want to do, that you can do, and that you're going to work. It's 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the time you say, I'm going on holidays for a week, that's when things happen.
Exactly. And
that's
you're not
when you
off.
Go,
yeah.
No, that's when you something happens, or we're going away for a weekend. You can bet something will happen then. And that's just business. You can never switch off.
Do you think that people aren't aware of what it takes to become an entrepreneur, what it takes to be self-employed, if they don't have exposure to what it takes?
Yeah, I think so. I think that people underestimate how difficult it is.
It looks glamorous from the outside. Yeah. Certainly where I'm sitting, it's very glamorous, but it's hard work.
It's really hard work. So, you know, myself and Pork run our own business. We have five children. We live out of the same pot. So, you know, if business isn't doing well, then what pressure. Do you do? Yeah, it's pressure. So I think for me, because I come from a self-employed background and so does he, we grew up that way. We actually don't know any different. I honestly don't think anybody would ever give either of us a job.
Well, this is it. So if you're self-employed, it would be very hard to imagine, you know, because you're so, you are the boss, you are the captain of the ship. It would be very hard to put you into a box then, wouldn't it?
Really difficult, yeah. So I think, and that's the other thing about self-employed people is, I don't think that it's very hard. It would be very hard for me to walk into a job, I think, in the morning.
Yeah. Well, thankfully, I don't think that's going to be an issue. So let's talk about Pestle and Mortar then. So only 5 years ago, 2014, you launched with your first product, the hyaluronic serum. So what happened? Where were you when you decided this is something that Irish women, to start with, need? What was the catalyst?
So with our portrait photography business, we traveled around the world for around 4 or 5 years educating professional photographers. So it was really through travel that I noticed a gap in the market. So while I was on shoots, so we would speak at conferences in America, Brazil, all around the world, I noticed that when the model's skin was being prepped, the makeup artists were using skin products that had hyaluronic acid in them. And I had never heard of the ingredient and I knew nothing about it. But what I did notice was how good their skin looked after using products with hyaluronic acid. And they didn't necessarily have really good skin. And also it was the first time I was really seeing models being photographed in shoots, because that was not our business.
No, it was ours was family
portrait photography. So I had an idea, what if I could create a product and give it to my everyday customers, the women that we photograph, the mothers, every day, and help them with their skin, and try and make their skin look as good as what I'm seeing from behind the lens at these shoots. Because I had made a correlation, like they didn't have amazing skin.
But the product was making them look better.
So I kind of discovered that if your skin is hydrated and looks hydrated, it's going to look younger. And then my sister, she is a biochemist. She doesn't work in that field now, but she did study biochemistry. So I had a chat with her about creating a product, a serum with hyaluronic acid present, and about that molecule, and did it work or not? Because, you know, you hear loads of myths. So if you use X, Y, and Z, you're going to wake up and you're going to look amazing. And not all the time do these ingredients work.
No.
So she told me that, yes, it is one of those. It's actually a really old ingredient and it does work. Yeah. So I did my market research like anyone would. And I checked out every single hyaluronic serum I could find.
Yeah.
And guess what? I didn't like any of them. Okay. So I discovered through that I must be really fussy.
Ah, well, that's okay though.
Yeah, so I discovered from my market research that, okay, I must be really fussy, or B, I can't use this product. Because every serum I used was sticky and tacky. I couldn't wait to wash it off my skin.
Okay.
So then I had the idea that what if I created one that wasn't sticky or tacky and still as effective? And that's really how it all started.
The birth of Pestle and Mortar. And so, okay, so then what was the next step then? So where did you go to create that product? You know, because for me, if I was thinking, okay, I'd love to create, I wouldn't know how to even start. So where was it? What was the next step for you?
So I researched laboratories and biochemists that I could work with. And my brother, who he travels extensively around Asia, he had a contact in a laboratory in Asia. One of his, he imports natural stone and tiles, and one of his big customers had a sister who was a biochemist and had a laboratory. So that was my first.
So your family were quite involved in the inception of Pestle and Mortar. Was there ever a point when they're like, oh, Sonia, come on, like you can't do everything? Because five kids, very busy business where you're flying around the world. Did they try and dissuade you at all?
No, because I come from an entrepreneurial background. So, but anybody else would have.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't share I didn't share anything really with anybody else. Mm.
And tell me what kind of, it's a very saturated market. You know, it is now and it certainly was in 2014. Was there, you know, when you did your research, was there a point that, you thought, I don't know how I can launch something in a business that has, there's so many brands now. Did that dissuade you or did that?
No, to be honest with you, I didn't even think about the other brands.
Yeah.
And I'm not lying because I didn't come from the industry.
And also you've admitted you weren't that into, you're not that into makeup.
I'm not into makeup, no. And I'm into skincare, but I didn't know. Okay, I know about brands and I'm into fashion and I'm into beauty. But it wasn't like I had all these skincare brands on my radar and I'm going after X, Y, or Z.
Okay.
That was not my thought process at all.
You just wanted that
I just wanted to create that one product that
just
worked.
Need some hyaluronic serum.
And
for
that's
God's
all
sake.
That was my that really was my sole focus.
But I think it's a great way to start, you know, because we're introduced to brands and, you know, and I say it's a saturated market, it really is. Like, I mean, there are hundreds of brands that we can go to for our skincare now. I think and we're exposed to them as a full range. I think it's a really smart way to start off with just that one product and do it right. There's a trust that I would have in you, you know, prior to using your products, because it's just one thing and you're focusing on it and you're doing it right.
And that's the way, well, we also knew that if we could create that one hero product, we could also market that one hero product. So it's much easier to market one product as opposed to 30.
Exactly.
And, you know, we knew a bit about marketing from our previous business. So I think that, you know, we had all the factors were in place and it kind of just worked for us. I think there's a bit of luck. There was a bit of luck on our side as well.
You think so?
I think, okay, we're very hard workers but I think that the timing was just absolutely right for us.
Were there any moments that you could define as jumping off points where the growth really started because of one particular interaction, be it, you know, PR-wise or in the media? Was there anything that really kind of led to the growth?
So we had, at the very beginning, when we created the brand and launched our first product, we had come from running a portrait studio in Newbridge where we employed three people. And we were at the top of our game. So people, you know, we had customers, clients that flew in from all over the world to have their portraits taken with us. So we were world renowned in our portrait studio. Amazing. In the photography world, everybody knew who we were. And that's where we had come from. So our goal and our sole focus was to make Pestle and Mortar the same. Okay. So, but we also knew that our studio could not be a global business.
It's the nature of photography, isn't
yeah.
it? You know, so, if I'm going to you, I want you.
Yes, exactly. So if you came into our studio, you would want Pork to photograph you and you would want me to guide you through the correct portrait choice. Yes.
Okay.
So, and also with the you know, digital photography had just come along as well. And, you know, all those factors, you know, they don't help with that type of business.
Changing,
the market
course,
was changing, So we knew, you know, when we set up Pestle and Mortar and when we started, we always had a global focus. We weren't just doing it to sell a few products in, you know, in Newbridge or in Dublin or in Ireland. At the very beginning, we had all of the systems set up, but it was only myself and Porik that did it. We did all of it.
So your website, that's
everything.
Amazing. So your
we
website
did everything.
could cater to global customers from the outset, so from the, as many as possible.
Yeah, so we had a .com website at the beginning, and then
even the back end could manage everything, the huge customers that you have now.
Everything.
Isn't that amazing?
So we were always
that foresight.
There was, but we were always really early adapters into technology. So we would have been one of the very first portrait studios to use Facebook to market our business. Okay, and everyone would say, why are they why are they using Facebook? We were using Eventbrite 12 years ago
for events.
You know, so we.
So I think we can scratch off this idea of luck having anything to do with things. I think, you know, it's amazing to have that vision, you know?
Yeah.
And I think, and I really do think the vision helps in the, you know, in the realization of it. You have to see the big picture and you have to see the end goal to know where you're going, don't you?
You definitely have to. Definitely. I mean, I remember we at the very beginning, we always worked with a PR agency and we still do in London and New York. And we got a really good piece in the New York Times in 2015, and that put us on the map in America. Absolutely. We sold out all over the world. We had our product was already in a fulfillment center there. Yeah. So all the sales happened seamlessly. And amazing. That set us up in America.
Did,
so
yeah.
we actually got enough capital there that we could plow ahead into the American market. And
in terms of the growth in the American market, then, you know, the one product at a time is what I find most interesting. Mm. One product paid for the expansion. So going one by one and, you know, those milestones along the way, being New York Times piece and the American market, they're all paying for the next thing. So it's a really organic growth, although it's a curated and a definite path you have, but it's happening so easily, I suppose. Well, from the outset.
Well, from the,
from the outside. No, it's happening so carefully and organically.
Well, I suppose we want to grow our business organically.
Yeah.
Of course, we can take a ton of money. We have offers every day. We get offers.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we can expedite that growth if we choose to, or we can continue growing organically. Mm. But our organic growth at the moment is fairly quick.
Impressive. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but we know, I think though, the more we learn to grow our business organically, the more we learn about our business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And do you think that there is a point, so you are the sole or owners of the company now, do you think that there is a point when you might welcome those outside investors?
It really depends. I think that we can handle, you know, we can handle a lot of growth ourselves.
Yeah.
It really depends on the Asian market.
Mm.
And that's where we might need investment.
Mm-hmm. So then going back to the one product at a time, do you think that appeals to a customer who might be overwhelmed with the, because there's a lot out there. Do you think that it appeals to a customer who just wants to know, this works, I'm taking it, and I don't need to know about the bells and whistles that go with other brands?
I think that skincare can be really complicated.
Yeah.
So you have skincare that is for oily skin or dry skin or acne skin. Our skincare is formulated to suit all skin types. So every product is formulated as a hero product. So what I mean by that is our hyaluronic serum has the active ingredient is hyaluronic acid. Our superstar night oil, the active ingredient is the retinoid. So we don't. Everything has a different base and a different function. Mm-hmm. No two products are formulated in the same way. We have one moisturizer. Mm-hmm. We're never going to have two.
Okay.
So we really want to keep it simple.
Keep it simple, and that works for the customer. Then your branding is really simple, but really beautiful, you know. What was the process behind that? Because I must admit, I'm one of those consumers who I do actually think, and I, you know, I'm embarrassed to admit it, but I do actually think about how products will look in my bathroom, you know, how they will look on my shelves. We are, I suppose, that superficial in our consumerism. Was this a consideration for you guys then when you were picking that font and you were deciding on the colours and the very simple approach you've taken to branding?
Yeah, so we spent hours and hours, and we still do, on our branding and our design and our packaging. So Porik is really creative. He's joint CEO of the business now, but at the beginning he was head of creative and the creative direction.
Yeah.
So if you had walked into our portrait studio 10 years ago, And if you looked at Pestle and Mortar now, you would know that it was our brand.
It's your style.
It's completely reflective of us.
Yeah. Okay. So that is just your yes. style. And there's no good way. Well, it's beautiful. Is your house like that then too?
No, well, not, no. No, not with the five guests.
One day it will be not yet. Simple and elegant. So then in terms of brand positioning then, you know, Pestle and Mortar is situated in Brand Thomas beside all of the huge premium brands. And globally, you know, you are in the best locations globally. Is that something that, you know, are there offers coming in? I know there's offers coming in for investment, but are there offers coming in from potential stockists that you've had to sidestep to protect the prominence of Pestle and Mortar?
Yeah, absolutely. So we would class ourselves as affordable luxury. Mm-hmm. So we need to make sure that we sit in the right areas and partner with the right stores.
Yeah.
And we take a lot of time and consideration before we ever sign with the distributor. Mm-hmm. So the distributor we've signed with in Dubai and Russia, we visited them at least 4 to 5 times.
Mm. Oh, right.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. So we're very, it's a marriage. And if we choose the wrong partner, they can ruin our brand in that country.
Yeah.
So we really take our time.
I'm kind of blown away by, you know, I know you have such an incredible background in business, and both of you do, but you know a lot about a lot, you know? So like, you know, brand development, brand positioning, everything is so considered. What does your team consist of now?
So we have 30 on our team. So we have a very strong creative department.
Yeah.
Marketing, graphic design. Then we have obviously our logistics department, mm-hmm. accounting department and sales departments. Mm-hmm. When you say that we seem to know a lot about business, we do. We know a lot about every aspect of the business. And I think as an entrepreneur, that's the way you are. Because we started the business.
Yeah.
So it was only myself and Porik. So we knew everything. We built the website.
Yeah.
So we know how to build a website.
And
we know
learning
how
as
to,
you go, I would assume.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Because, you know, we didn't have tons of money to put into spending, you know, 20,000 on our website.
Yeah.
We did it ourselves. Okay. I wrote the copy.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, and it's really like, and that's the truth. We had to learn everything ourselves.
As you went.
Yeah.
And there you go. But it all lends to the success of it. It really does. So QVC was a big move for you guys as well. And I just think, you know, globally, we recognize the prominence of QVC. What did that feel like? I assume it's not just a matter of them calling and saying, hey, hop on a plane and come over and sell your product. Was there a lot of preparation for that appearance on QVC?
Huge amount. So it took us 18 months from the time they said yes to actually be ready to go on. So I would have had a Skype training call every Tuesday for 12 months before I went on air. Huge, because not only do you have to, you know, you have to look well on TV. I'm not a TV person. I've never been on TV before but, you know, you have to sell yourself and you have to sell the brand and you actually have to physically be selling products as well on live TV where, you know, in America, they're absolute professionals at selling on TV.
So for a year, you were having training sessions.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
but then, I mean, you're going into 140 million homes once that camera goes live.
Yeah, so...
Was that nerve-wracking?
Absolutely nerve-wracking.
That's a rhetorical question.
Yeah,
of course
So I nearly didn't go on. I never forget. I was so nervous. And they literally had to push me on and say, Sonia, just get on there.
Oh, my God.
So when you get mic'd up and you're on with the presenter, I had 7 minutes. And at the beginning of the show, you know, they have to learn about the brand, you know, really quickly and absorb it and then think about whether they're going to buy it. But the products kind of started selling in the 5th minute. Wow. And then they gave us an extra minute because we sold out.
You sold out.
Yeah, so less than 1% of new brands sell out on QVC.
Oh, less than 1%. That really
on their
incredible.
First appearance, yeah.
And so did you, in advance of that, I know that there were things you were preparing for, like the presentation style. How did you prepare your brand? Did you have to get, you know, your production facilities to be ready to cope with the demand that you were ultimately going to face on QVC?
Yeah, so we had to make sure we had stock in our own DCs. We have 3 DCs in America where we ship product in and it's ready to go. And also, you have to ship the product into QVC's DC. So there's a lot of preparation. It's not straightforward. Mm. It can be quite complicated.
And there was a second appearance then?
There was, yeah. I appeared over 8 times in the US. Yeah.
So you are just walking no, in there saying, hi guys, I'm ready. Mic me up and off I go. But it's an amazing experience. Mm. That has to be one of those points that you're like, okay, this is, we'll talk about this forever.
Yeah.
Amazing. So let's talk about the future of Pestle & Mortar then, okay? Because it's been an organic growth. It's a steady growth in terms of expanding your range. Do you think you might go down the route of makeup or body skincare? You know, is this something that you're interested in?
I was never really interested in colour, so makeup, it's not really my thing, so I'm not really passionate about it. So, but definitely body products, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
They're in the pipeline.
Yes.
Okay. So it's been 5 years then. If we were to talk, I know we talk about projections in business. We were to talk about your hope projections, what do you think you would like to achieve if we were to sit down, and I would love to, in 5 years' time and talk about what has changed for Pestle & Mortar?
I think we would really love to crack the Asian market.
Okay.
We have 2 fluent Mandarin speakers in the office to deal with the distributor that we're working with. Mm. We don't understand the language. We can't read the language. Mm. So we need to have it live translated. And also, you know, they like to deal with somebody through their own language.
Nice.
So I think for us, if we crack the Asian market,
I'm very happy.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't doubt it will happen. So you're moving in that direction anyway already. It's in place. Well, look, it's just been a joy to talk to you. And, you know, it's such an impressive story as an Irish businesswoman, what you both have created together. So I look forward to seeing what the next 5 years bring for Pestle & Mortar.
Oh, thanks, Louise.
Thank you for joining me on the Brand Thomas podcast. Thank you for listening to the Brian Thomas podcast. If you like what you heard, make sure to share and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and follow us on Official Brian Thomas on Instagram for more updates.